Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Now for Brain Injury Radio, sponsored by Lehman Law Firm. If you want automatic notifications, please join us at www.tbisn.org. Now with your host.
Well, hello, everybody. This is Craig Cecilia. I'm hosting Brain Injury Radio tonight. I want to thank everybody for listening. And I want to apologize. I might be a little off. I'm going to talk about advocacy tonight and brain injury specific. I've been going through some seizures over the last probably 2 weeks. And so I go and I go to the doctor. And so he puts me on this new med. He said, this is the best med. And it'll help your seizures. It's recommended for traumatic brain injury and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And so anyway, I start taking the med. And I'm not feeling so good. My stomach's kind of upset. And so I go to him and I'm going, you know, I don't think this is a good med for me. And so anyway, so I've been taking it now for about a week, maybe eight or 9 days. And I tell you what, my whole body right now is broken out with hives. My chest is just like covered with hives, my face, my eyes. And so I obviously stopped taking the medicines because I think I was about ready to go in anaphylactic shock. You know, I'm not quite sure what was going on. But anyway, so I stopped taking it, so I have another appointment with him tomorrow. Now, mind you, I don't have insurance right now. I'm hoping to fix that, and so I'm advocating to create enough funding in my life to get insurance. But anyway, what started the seizures is in my brain injury community over here in the Northwest, professionals kind of like to define who we are. Actually, they kind of like to own us. I don't know the best way to describe it. But it was really getting to me. A lot of the survivors in my area, I mean, I know everybody out there sees a lot of these events, and believe it or not, I do not do all these events myself. And actually, I have very little to do with it. I promote them. I assist people. It's actually the other members, the leaders in the groups. And so at one of their conferences, I'm not going to say who because I'm just not, but one of these organizations' conferences, they actually claim to put on this camp out that we've been putting on for 5 years. And I was offended, I have to tell you. And then I got an email from somebody, and they couldn't decide what their organization does and what Craig does. And so just to show you how out of touch these folks were, and so over the last week I've been working on kind of a mission statement for us survivors in our area. Because the Survivors Network is not this big organization. It is a group of survivors who believe in organizing for better outcomes, better services, to make friends. And that's kind of where I got into this. Advocacy is so important. If you go to your legislators, and believe it or not, they tell you they know about brain injury, but not a one of them has a relationship with somebody with a brain injury, hardly. And even people who are sitting on these organizations, that are supposedly serving us, they don't have a relationship with folks with brain injuries. We scare people because it is an unknown disability to a lot of people. They're frightened of us, mainly because we're not dumb. You know, most of us are actually pretty sensitive and in tune to things around us, and we really have a perspective. And I might think of the word that I want to think of, but we have a perspective on life that we know what's important now, and I think that frightens people because I don't know about you guys out there, but I can't be bought. Either I'm going to do it, and you can sponsor me, and I'll gladly be a part of it, but I'm not going to do it if it goes against how I feel with things. And so my biggest thing, you know, I've only had my brain injury. It's going on 6 years, and I've been trying in my community to show folks that it's not the scary disability, that, man, it affects so many people, over 5 million people. And first, to have the magnitude of the population with this many people with this disability and people not to understand it and to be afraid of us, shame on them. I mean, you go back to the old-timers, even in the 1800s and the 1700s, they knew about it. I mean, for instance, if they would cause you a brain injury. You ever hear, I'm going to knock you silly, son? You see that on all the old Westerns. It's because they knew you damage the brain, things go kind of wacky for a while. But anyway, with that, I am going to bring on some folks that are advocating around the country, doing amazing things. And the first person I'm going to bring on is Mike, and I'm going to let him introduce himself because I don't know how much permission I have. But he's advocating for a pretty cool thing. I believe it's in the House right now, or the Senate, and I'm not sure if it's in the federal. Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Hi, yes. Hi, how are you, Craig?
I'm doing great, and so I have been following you, and so is this a federal law what you guys are working on?
Yes, it is. It's called the Disabled Public Safety Officers Fairness Act, and what it does, this would allow, it would provide public safety officer disability benefits to officers disabled before the enactment of the Federal Public Safety Officer Disability Benefit Law. And this law was established November 29th of 1992. So it means anyone that's disabled, any public safety officer that's disabled after November date in 1992 can get this federal disability benefit law. But anyone that was injured before this date is just plumb out of luck. And I don't think it's fair. And I have been writing to hundreds of congressmen, and I finally got one congressman about a year and a half ago, Congressman Ed Towns out of Brooklyn. He agreed to sponsor the bill, and I've been working with his legislative director in Washington, D.C., Emily Sheedy, about, you know, how we can get support for this bill. And, you know, I'm just trying to get support for the bill. And right now, this past Friday, Congressman Towns introduced the Disabled Public Safety Officers Fairness Act into the Congress. So now it has a number. It's H.R. 3367. And it was delivered to the a committee in the House Judiciary Committee, which is chaired by Congressman Lamar Smith. He's a congressman out of Texas.
So let me ask you, so what motivated you to start this process?
Well, I'm a total permanent disabled volunteer firefighter. I was struck by a car directing traffic to a fire back in 1972. And I had issues with the New York State Workers' Compensation Board. I was only totally partially disabled, and it took 20 years to get information from my doctors that uncovered that I suffered a traumatic brain injury in 1972 that wasn't uncovered because the medical knowledge back in 1972 to identify a traumatic brain injury. And so in 1992, I went before a workers' compensation law judge, and I told him I needed more money than $80 a week. I couldn't live on that. And he laughed at me. He said, if you want to do anything about this, then change the workers' compensation law. So that's what I did. I took the information from my doctors about my traumatic brain injury, and I went to see a friend of mine that was in the New York State Assembly, Jim Alesi. And together, Jim and I drafted a bill that would order and direct the Workers' Compensation Board of New York State to redetermine my degree of disability as if I was injured, you know, presently in the 1990s. And this brought my disability benefits up, and it also brought 28 or 38 other total permanent disabled volunteer firefighters and volunteer ambulance workers up to the current benefit rate of $400 a week. And, you know, so I just found out about the public safety officer's disability benefit law back in the 90s, and I've been trying to get that going, and I've been working on this, seems like about 5 or 6 years now, and I finally got Congressman Ed Towns to take a look at this bill and do something about it.
So I want to ask you one more question. Are you meeting anyone who's are you running into people who are obstacles, who are saying, well, no, this isn't a good idea? Is anyone actually saying that, or is everybody on board?
Nope. Well, I've written to the the New York State Sheriff's Association, and they're very interested in supporting the bill. They're checking with their legislative committee, and depending on how the legislative committee, you know, decides on supporting the bill or not, they're going to also get the National Sheriff's Association, which covers over 30,000 sheriffs throughout the United States, you know, to support this bill also.
Well, cool. So when do you think, are they going to take it to a vote this next session, or do you know where it is in the process? I mean, where are they in passing this?
The bill was just presented to Congress this past Friday, November 4th, and it's going to take a long time for it to go through the Judiciary Committee, who has the bill now. And so what I've been doing, I just mailed out letters to each member on the Judiciary Committee, asking them to please favorably pass the bill out of their committee and back onto the Congress floor for a vote.
Well, do me a favor. Spill out for our listeners how they can help you and how they can get the word out. Do you have some websites or phone numbers?
Yeah. Well, no. What the listeners could do, if they could contact their own congressperson and ask them to, to be a co-sponsor of H.R. 3367. This is the Disabled Public Safety Officers Disability Fairness Act. And if they could also write a letter to Congressman Lamar Smith, he's the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, which has this bill right now. His address is 2409 Rayburn House Office Building, Washington, D.C., 20515. His phone number is 202-225-4236. And ask him to, favorably pass this bill out of his committee. That would help an awful lot.
All right. Well, awesome. Well, I'm going to go to our next call. Don't go anywhere, because I bet you folks are going to have some questions for you. And I want to thank you on behalf of all of the survivors around the country and around the world, making this happen for people. I mean, that protects our policemen, our firefighters, anyone who's in public works. And, God bless
you. Sure.
Keep up the fight, Mike. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you.
And now, hopefully, if my things are right, do I have John on the phone?
Yes, I'm here, Craig. Hi,
hey, John. And I'm going to give a little spill to folks who might not know you. Anyway, John did this incredible video, and I wish my doctor would have seen this video, and I'm going to mess up the name. It's You Look Great, right?
Yes, You Look Great, living inside a brain injury.
All right, because right after my brain injury, after I recovered and I was out of the coma, all the broken stuff was doing okay. Everyone looked at me and said, "You look fine. What's your problem?" Like I was an idiot. And I can't tell you how devastating that is on our psyche as we're trying to rediscover ourselves and people aren't getting it. And I just got to ask you, what motivated you to make that?
Well, it was my eldest son is a filmmaker, and I had been giving a series of talks. I'm 6 years into my injury here in the Boston area, and I've been in really, really good hands. And Spalding Rehab is, I think, number five in the country for rehab hospitals. And so that's where I got my care. What drove me then was I was invited to speak to a few graduate schools in the area here in Boston. One was the Mass General Hospital Institute for Health Professions, Boston College Social Work, Boston University, and a couple others. Anyway, so I had been keeping journals throughout my recovery, and I decided to really put the best of what I learned from my strategy teams in there. And so this became a script to these schools, what the injury is like from the inside. And they always were quite grateful to have me there because I'm not in a textbook. You know, I'm flesh and blood and with real emotion, you know. And so Chris filmed me giving this talk just in two different places in our house. And because he's a filmmaker, he just really spiced it up. I mean, he actually made it funny and engaging and just spliced in the most bizarre film clips. But it all... to punctuate the points in my talk, which was what the injury is like, what the sequelae or symptoms can look like or feel like, and what the feedback I continue to get, and this is 3 years later, is that people are having their spouses and their friends watch this film, and it clicks like, that's what it's like. You know, brain injury isn't like, oh, you know, I forget what my keys are, too, or, yeah, sometimes I need to lie down, too. And we're all thinking, that's not at all what it's like. So I think the film really helped clarify and illustrate in a really engaging way. And that script became the first draft of at least the structure of the book that came out just a few months ago.
Well, awesome. I got to tell you, I wish I would have seen that video about a year after my injury. I have to tell you, I wasn't ready for the first year because I was, you know, you know, when the doctors tell you, well, you're healed, you know, it's a miracle, son, you're healed, the brain's healed, they don't feel pain, and so you should be fine, and I bought into that, and it took me another year after that to realize that they were wrong. Anyway, yeah, I think you guys have better doctors there, and I shouldn't say better, I just found the wrong doctor to help me. I mean, it's just a fact. I mean, there's doctors everywhere, and it's about getting the best care and
yeah, that was one of my concerns, too, putting this book together, because I was thinking of veterans, for example, who are getting really good care on site. They're getting pretty good care at you know, Walter Reed and so on, and then they get discharged to the rest of the country. And I'm thinking, you know, these pro-range of people, they're going to look fantastic, but they're going to basically say, I feel terrible. I feel awful. Okay. And the doctor, that's all the doctor's going to hear, and they're going to get medicated. And so I'm just feeling like we're preparing our brain injured citizens for, you know, life over the cuckoo's nest, and it just doesn't have to be that way. So I tried to really systematize what I learned from my speech pathologist, you know, three years with the speech pathologist who's been doing it for 25 years. Highlight from sessions with my social worker. I didn't even think I would need a social worker, but sure enough, a year after the injury, she became, you know, the critical part of the team. So what I learned from her, you know, is in the book as well. So that was, in a sense, trying to ensure that some of this great care I've been getting can be communicated. But Craig, you asked me to say a few things about advocacy. And my first thoughts are that, in a way, advocacy needs to begin with us as people. In some ways, I think being disabled can be a frame of mind. A lot of people who become disabled through an accident or disease, they often have a moment where it finally dawns on them, I'm disabled. You know, maybe it's out of frustration, they can't do something they knew they could do before. And that's inevitable, and it's probably a point of acceptance in some ways to have that moment, okay, I'm disabled. But the danger is if you stay there, and that's why I said I think being disabled is a frame of mind, because you think victim. If we let our disability, what we can't do, define who we are, then that very much limits us as people. And it's a very hopeless feeling injury, and that just kind of cuts down some of the hope, too. If I thought writing a book was – wasn't something a disabled person could do, I wouldn't have started it. And then once I started, I couldn't stop. But in practical terms, how it might sound is if you tell yourself you're stupid for not following that conversation, or if someone just said something too fast and you're too embarrassed to ask them to repeat it. But, you know, Craig, I got tired of that really quickly. Without even saying I have a brain injury, I have no problem asking someone to repeat something they've said. Sometimes it's just bad manners or poor conversational skills. You know, if the person is talking too fast or they didn't say something more clearly, I don't bear that burden. I ask them to clarify, and not because I have a brain injury. I mean, you and I know that's why I do it. I'm buying time, you know, but I don't need to communicate that. I just need to have them be more clear with me. So here's where I'm going with this train of thought. It's after talking with someone who would apologize to someone else for this or that, you know, inability. And I think here's what we have to do as survivors of the brain injury. Unapologetically bend the world to fit our requirements. Because we've tried and we've tried to conform ourselves back to the way we were, and we always fall short of that. It's because our brains just can't do it anymore. And we don't need to apologize for that. We also don't need to have to tell somebody we could have done that before the injury. So what if you could or couldn't? We have to be really, really forward-thinking. Really forward-thinking.
Absolutely.
And it's also true that... Go ahead. Sorry,
I just want to point one thing out. I mean, disability, just the label itself, if you go back in our history, George Washington, Abraham Lincoln, Einstein... I'm missing a whole bunch of people. People with disabilities always thought differently than the mainstream people. And some of the greatest minds in our history were people with significant disabilities because they could bend the world into a better place. And so keep bending, John. Just keep bending.
I'll keep bending until I snap, baby. You know, it's also true, we can always remind ourselves, too, that even as survivors, we're still more capable than other people doing some things. I mean, and the way I like to think of it is that we have as much right to stand on our tiny little piece of real estate as anybody, so we don't need to slink around, you know, because that's kind of, we communicate a lot with our body language, and sometimes I just remind myself, put your shoulders back, you know? They don't know what you're going through inside. You don't have to communicate that. And so I try to you know, muster up some pride, and I walk with purpose and remind myself that I'm a human being and I'm as valuable as anybody else. So I just want to encourage people not to apologize anymore, you know, for who you've become. And even though the purpose of all of this isn't clear to us, but I think to really be a survivor. And as my friend Michelle Domi says, a survivor is we're thriving, we're not just surviving. But I think to really be that, we have to unapologetically bend the world to fit our requirements. So as far as advocacy, should I say something about advocacy?
Sure. So, yeah, what are you finding that the film's helping with advocacy? Because I know, I have to tell you, I do a class at the community college. It's a brain injury class, and it's for students with brain injury. And we have a pretty good turnout. This year, we have 70 people enrolled, and that is one of the requirements. We watch that. We watch every 21 or every 19 seconds, whatever it's called. We watch Rick Franklin's film, Brain Injury Dialogues, and we watch a couple of other things that are locally. But I want people to get the grasp of what's going out in other communities. And so your film is serving for advocacy with hundreds of minds that have brain injuries that are going to be leaders. And if they have this knowledge, it's just powerful. I want to thank you for that film because I show it every quarter.
Well, that's great. Yeah, that's I'm really pleased. And I'll try to remember to tell Chris that too. He lives in Brooklyn now, so I'll see him at Thanksgiving. The other thing about advocacy, I just wanted to squeeze in here. And then, if you feel free, Craig. I mean, it's your show to cut away to calls. I'm not sure how the direction of this works, but should I just talk and tell you
Well, you might know it because we have a lot of people wanting to ask questions tonight. We have quite a call list in. So go ahead and finish your thought. I want to get to some of our other callers, okay. And don't go anywhere because they may have some questions for you. And everyone, you can see John and Mike's stuff. It's on tbisn.org, and they do some incredible things. Please watch what they're doing and let them know what you think of it.
Yeah, just one last thing, and this is specifically about advocacy. I'm on the board now at the Brain Injury Association for Massachusetts, and they asked me to go into Boston every 3 weeks, and we meet at the Disability Law Center next to the State House in Boston. And this is brand new, okay? This is just starting up the past, I think we've been doing this for 4 months now. It's called the Cross Disability Advocacy Coalition, and only Massachusetts is doing this. And if we do this right, I think it can really serve as a model for all the other states. One thing I learned is that the disabled are the largest minority in this country and the poorest. So if I'm a politician, and you know, being in these meetings, I look around the table and all the major disabilities are represented there in that one room. And I started thinking of how many brain injured people there must be in Massachusetts, then how many, and I started counting off these disabilities. If I were a politician, I'd be foresightful enough to see us as a voting block, a very important voting block. So we will be heard. We will be heard, especially if we stay together, you know. So I'll keep you posted on how this cross-disability advocacy coalition works. You might be interested in a vision statement. You finally hammered one out. It's two sentences, and it's pretty good. The Cross-Disability Advocacy Coalition will become a strong, united voice for people with disabilities and lived experience. The coalition will be engaged and form partnerships that identify common denominators and build a powerful constituency, influencing legislation and policy change that improves the lives of our community and ensures full inclusion. So I thought that's pretty great. And I hope we
very awesome.
Yeah.
And actually, so I'm going to put you on hold. I'm hoping our next caller, we're starting the same thing here with disability rights. And it was going to be just for brain injury, but there's more. The way our economy is, we all have to stick together because we have power together.
Yes.
So don't go anywhere, John. I'm sure folks are going to have questions, and I am hoping that I have Penny Condal. Do I have Penny Condal?
You got me.
Oh, well, better yet. Well, no, I don't mean that, Penny, if you're listening. So let me introduce you. So on the phone right now, folks, I have Tommy Manning. And so in the state of Washington, we have really poor services. But bless Tommy's heart, he would go to his local representative, and his representative, Flanagan, who's retired now, and he'd sit there every day, and he'd ask, hey, yo, what are you going to do for brain injury? Every day. So, Tommy, what motivated you to do that?
Well, the fact that, you know, I wanted to prove something to the state of Washington that brain-injured people have abilities, but some are just not allowable to work because of these disabilities. And I don't know, we have a strong advocate coming up here shortly. She wants to join back in Congress. Of course, I'm talking about Gabby Giffords out of Arizona. And I imagine she will be a real good advocate for the brain injured. I hear she's going back to Congress, or she's thinking about it. She really wants to go. Her husband, Kelly. His last name is Kelly. He's with, he used to be an astronaut, but he quit to take care of Gabrielle Giffords. And, well, you know, you
absolutely.
Asked, how about your, I'm sorry to hear about your insurance problem that you were talking about when you started the show.
Yeah, I'm hoping, I got cut off. When I started working, I got cut off, and I'm in poverty, but I make too much to get insurance, and it's a good thing because now I'm working a little more, and so I'm going to hopefully in January be able to afford my own insurance. And that's a good thing because it looks like they're cutting the state basic health insurance out of the, that's on the
state. They are.
In our,
yeah, they are.
Yeah, so, it's good. We're going to have a mess here. Well, Tommy, I'm going to put you on hold because I want to get as many callers, and we got quite a few callers on here. And so right now I have someone with their hand up from the 956. 956, can you hear me?
Yes.
Who am I talking with tonight?
This is Patricia Valdez.
Hey, Patricia, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just listening to y'all that I've been on your show before, and I've discussed about other things too. One person I was listening to was Mr. John, somewhere in the Boston area. I would like to know, how can I get a hold of his or get a copy of it, of the tape that he spoke of? Or is there a link?
Are you talking about John, the movie he made, You Look Great?
Yes, that one.
If you go onto our site, the Survivor Network, he has, if you go to the videos, he has some of the videos posted there, and I bet you if you email him, he'll tell you how to get his book. I can do better yet. You know, this is radio. Heck, we're high tech here. Give me 1 second. I see if the control panel is going to work. And so, John, where can Patricia get your book?
It's available on Amazon. If you just search for You Look Great, and my last name is spelled Byler, B-Y-L-E-R, it'll come right out.
How? B? Again?
It's, yes,
okay.
B as in boy, Y-L-E-R.
Byler, okay.
Yeah, it'll come right out. All right, yeah.
Okay, thank you. Thanks a lot.
It's an awesome video. You'll definitely love it. And so... So do you have any other questions or you have any input?
No, just the fact that sharing what y'all are sharing, it's just the best thing ever. Sharing your experiences, how you were able to survive. I think we all have to compensate in some way or another. We start learning how to use the different senses, all the senses that we have, and maybe not all completely, but we learn to use other senses as we learn to move on, right?
Absolutely. I have to tell you, I may have some idiosyncrasies and some deficits now, but I'm an all-around, I think, better person than I was before my injury. I'm compassionate. I got some health issues, but you know what? I am real now, and I thought I was real before, but I'm really real now. I have no choice.
No, I've seen it. I mean, I feel the same way. I'm right there with you, too. I hear you.
So awesome. Well, Patricia, don't hang on, and thank you for calling in. I'm going to go get some of the other callers on here, and bear with me, guys. I'm kind of stepping on my tongue, but I think I'm going to make it through the show. 610, can you hear me?
Yes, hi, this is Madeline, and actually, it's like old home week for me. I know Tommy Manning, I know John Byler, I've talked to John a great deal about issues relating to advocacy. One thing I will say about Gabby Gifford and going back to work, and I think it's an important thing to recognize, self-awareness is a huge issue for people with brain injury, and going back to work, unfortunately, we live in a society where people admire talking fast, multitasking, any job you apply for, you go to any job. I don't care whether you're talking about a secretary or anything at all. The clerk at Macy's, it says, must be able to multitask, must be able to work independently, must be this, this, this. All the things that are usually challenges for people with brain injury. And so I don't know Gabby Gifford. I haven't met her. I haven't talked to her. I don't know. I read some things about her, and she's had excellent care, some of the best care you can get in the country. But I also am a little bit bothered by the press insisting she's going back to work 6 months after a bullet went through her brain, when most of the people I know with brain injury are struggling to go back to work 6 years after their brain injury. So, and I think it can be a disservice as well as an inspiration, because it gives the presentation that anybody can achieve these great things, when in fact it's a really hard row. And one of the things I say as an advocate all the time is this takes a long time. This is years. It is hard, hard work. And 90% of the people do not have resources. They don't have health care. They don't have good rehab. They don't have good support services. Family and friends abandon them. And that is as important as anything else.
Right. And, you know, my own opinion, I hope I'm wrong, but I went back to work a while after my injury, and I crashed. I totally ruined my best friend at my work. I ruined my job, and I went out with a bang. I lost it. I was not ready even at a year. And
That story is one I've heard from many, many, many people with brain injury. Because you feel, there's an expression with stroke, and I think the same is true with brain injury. The first year, you think you're okay, and everybody else around you knows you're not. The second year, you know you're not, but everybody else is saying, oh, you're doing better. It's the third year when people start to recognize that you're doing better, and you start to recognize you're doing better, but you also know that you still have deficits. But it's very common for people to go back to work.
But, you know, at my first year, I was in denial. I was telling I wanted to be fine so bad, and so I lived up. I'm fine, doing fine. Doctor asked me, how you doing? I'm doing fine. And I had to crash to find out how fine I wasn't doing. It's unfortunate that's how my journey was.
It's true of many people, though. I mean, it's not – I think that's so common that you should feel like that's actually healthy, because that's a sign that your own inner spirit wanting to be better, but – The fact is that it's a struggle. It's a huge struggle.
Without a doubt.
And
so how do you know Tony Manning?
I co-manage an online site called BIIFEA with Dr. Tom Tatlock and some other people. And there's a lot of brain injury survivors on it, and Tommy's a very major contributor to the site, and often puts in articles and interests and communicates with everybody very nicely and has wonderful things to add and contribute. And I guess that's how I met John, too. And then John and I have talked a few times about his book and some different aspects of brain injury and recovery in the process of that. So I do a lot of advocacy in Pennsylvania.
Awesome, and we need it. And I think the biggest thing that we're missing is that, I mean, some states are doing really good. Some states have nothing going on. And, and I'm blessed for Tommy. You know, it's because of him that we're starting in our state. I mean, we have a long ways to go, but it's because of him that they're recognizing it. But how do we get it out so that it's not this hidden epidemic? It's not the silent epidemic that we don't fall into the woodworks, become isolated, because what happens is we become so depressed and isolated, people don't see us anymore. I mean, we hide. I mean, we're good hiders.
Yes. I'm doing actually a big event next year in the beginning of the year for Brain Injury Awareness Month, and the theme of the event is community, and I'm trying to go out into the community and have people understand what brain injury is, what it's not, the broad spectrum of kinds of issues that you can have, and to also understand, you know, it's like what John was saying. Sometimes you talk too fast, and not you personally, but, people will talk too fast. I need you to repeat yourself. And I'm in the process of learning to not feel ashamed of that or embarrassed by that. I totally understand why people with disability do not like to say, I have a disability. They like to say, I am alternately abled, because disability means you cannot do something, whereas sometimes you can just do different things or you can do something differently. And there's the whole notion of disability. It is the single largest subgroup, as John said, in the United States, after women. Women is the only larger subgroup. And if that community, the community of people who live with disabilities, ever puts their force together, their power and their weight, both in the voting booth and the economy, is enormous. And I think Tommy is a good person who's recognized that his voice counts, and he's used it, and John as well, you know, and each in their own way have really contributed something tremendous, and through the tools and technology, it's spread everywhere.
Absolutely. And I want to thank you for your hard work in behalf of all of us survivors. And so just God bless you, because whatever we can do to unite people, it makes a difference. And you're right about one thing. When it's not if, it's when we unite. We're going to be a force to reckon with. There's no doubt about that.
Yep, I agree. So thank you very much for what you're doing as well. I certainly do appreciate it, and I have listened to your show a number of times.
Well, thank you so much. Well, I'm going to put you on hold, because we have an unusual amount of callers tonight. And this is unusual. I have somebody from the unknown area code. Unknown, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Who am I talking
there?
To?
Craig, my name is Brent Fuse. I'm from New York State. I'm a friend of Mike Nicholson that you talked to earlier.
Okay. Well,
I'm also working on a project here in New York to develop a medical protocol to treat brain injury. I'm a former firefighter paramedic myself, and I was injured on the job by a couple co-employees playing a practical joke. And it's very hard to get proper care for brain injury. And what I did was wrote a complete medical procedure on how to treat it from the second someone is injured all the way through to the last medical person that will theoretically have anything to do with the person. And it leads the doctors through the path of what tests to do in what order, what doctors to send you to in what order, just like a protocol similar to a heart attack. And that way everyone would be receiving the same type of care, whether you're in Albany, New York, my area, or whether you'd be in Rochester where Mike Nicholson lives, or whether you were in a different part of the country. And that way everyone would be getting the same standard of care. And with these procedures written like this, people don't get misdiagnosed for years like many brain injured people do. You know, you would be diagnosed very quickly and sent to the right doctors in the right order, and then you would be, you know, given treatment plans and you would be given good, accurate care early on, which would, you know, help you get the most benefit of your life and not let the injury go on and tear you apart further like it does with so many people.
Yeah, it does.
And
it not only tears us apart, it tears our families apart too.
Right. And the whole thing is, it's like I've said to everybody, you know, everybody has their things with brain injury that they have like a little interest in. But I told people, you know, your health is the most important thing that you have. If you don't have your health, you don't have anything. And that's why a lot of brain injured people don't put the initial thought and effort into their early health part, because you know, their brain is damaged. It's difficult to think. They're not an expert in the medical field. You know, I had a lot more advantage with a lot of this because I had a great medical background being a paramedic. And so, you know, after a while, I said, I'm not getting cared for properly. There needs to be a protocol to make this work quickly, efficiently, just as if, like with a heart attack. You wouldn't not treat someone with a heart attack, would you, and let them die? The brain, when a brain injury occurs, there's actually death of brain tissue. So it's similar to a heart attack. Your heart muscle dies when you have a heart attack, parts of your heart muscle. So, you know, you need to treat this aggressively, just like a heart attack, instead of just many doctors look at you and saying, well, don't worry, go home, you'll be okay in 2 weeks. Most of us all know that's not the case at all. you know.
It is. And I got to add something because I was an EMT as well. Here in Washington, we have three levels. We have EMT, B, I, and P, and I only made it to I. But we talked a lot about supporting the neck and protecting the neck, but when it came down to brain injury, we were pretty clueless. I mean,
And that's what I'm trying to tell everybody. I was a full-fledged paramedic, all top level, and I had a lot of other training in the fields and stuff, so I was highly advanced. And the whole thing is everybody's forgetting about the brain. They're looking at all these other injuries you may have, but you got to remember your brain runs every single thing in your body. It runs your heart. It runs your nervous system. It runs everything. So when you start thinking about other things first, you're putting the cart before the horse. You know, and you really need to concentrate on what's really important, and that's the brain, and that's doing these procedures quickly and efficiently and not missing anything. And that's why I put it on paper, and the New York State Health Department is looking at this now very carefully because they have a five-year plan to develop a protocol for brain injury. You know, and I've told them they can speed this up drastically, and it doesn't have to take 5 years simply with the material that I've supplied to them. And this material soon will be circulated to other states in the country, and the idea is to make this a plan in New York State and then in other states and make it a national plan, like I said, so then everyone is getting the same care and there won't be any misdiagnoses anymore, you know, or just holding people in the hospital for a couple hours and you seem okay, we'll send you home. That's the wrong answer. With my procedures, it will prove whether you have a brain injury, yes or no, and if the answer is no, then maybe they can discharge you from the hospital. But if it's anything, yes, they need to hold on to you, do further testing, pull out the protocol, and what's the next step, and the next step. You know, instead of treating this so nonchalantly and, you know, unintelligently. And everything in my protocol is current things that are here. It's no cutting-edge science. It's all imaging that's available now. You know, there's no magic drug. It's just common sense on how you should go through this. That's all it really is.
Fucking piece of shit. The 941, I am so sorry. I have an EMT. 941, can you hear me? DJ? Okay. Well, I am so sorry, folks. I thought I was talking, and I didn't. And Brent, don't go anywhere. I am so sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. If you can establish that national protocol, you would save a ton of lives. And so I just figured out that you didn't hear the last 30 seconds of what I said. And DJ, if you're listening, I hope you call back in. There we go. I think you're there. DJ, is that you?
Wow, good timing, Craig. So sorry.
I felt so bad. I had you on mute, and then I hope, Brent, I hope you don't think I hung up on you. I had my phone on mute.
No, I have one phone out of my three mobile portable home phones that just it's like one of those dogs where you can train it as much as you want, but it's still going to shit on your carpet. I'm just being honest. It just hangs up on people. But, no, I wanted to call in late because I have spent a lot of time on the phone with Mike Nicholson over his bill. I typed up about 3 pages, plus took his email of something that he wrote. I can't remember exactly what it was called, The Journey of a Firefighter Scorned or something. And, I mean, man, it's just another example of how disability law just is ridiculous. And what Mike has explained to me is that this is something that's, you know, he's got his disability straightened out in New York, but he wants to make it a federal law that anybody between 1992 gets the benefits from 92 on. And, you know, that's where he falls. And he got it straightened out for New York, but he wants to make it a federal law. That's not easy. And then the last gentleman that just called, I talked to him on the phone. It might be a more important bill than Mike Nicholson's. I've talked to Brent, and it was the same exact thing of what happened with me. I hit my head at work. I worked. I went home, and I did not start to feel the, you know, the types of problems that a lot of people do right away with a head injury. It took a little while. I called an ambulance, presented with a head injury. My head was literally over the toilet bowl. I was sweaty. I was nauseous. I had somnolence, nauseousness, dizziness. I was about ready to vomit. That is all the signs of an intracranial bleed. Why did a ambulance with that kind of knowledge take me to a non-trauma center? And that is what Brett is trying to get done. He's trying to get legislation done to where, hey, these are the symptoms. It's a heart attack. This guy's heart, he's feeling his chest. His left arm is numb. His left side face is numb. He's having a stroke. It's A, B, C, D. And I think it's awesome that you got these two guys on the show tonight.
Yeah, hey, and hey, if you talk to Brett, hey, and you too, Mike, if you're listening, I did not hang up on him. He probably thinks, well, that rude Craig, when I went to click,
no.
I hate this technology. I mean, I need a real radio station so I don't have to mess with this technology.
We all do, Craig. I'm telling you right now, we all do. And Rose Moore, I'm sorry she didn't make the show on Monday, but I'll tell you what, she's real. And I think we need to get Rose, her own real live FM radio show. We need to get our own radio show. It is time. I'll be honest with you. If somebody wrote me and said, well, you contribute to a radio show, you do this and that, we can't give you Social Security. F you. Have a nice day. I don't want your Social Security. I really don't. I'll eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches as long as we can get the message out and help people out, because I am getting so deeply passionate about this, just like you are. And I swear to God, I'm sick of hearing some of the stories that I'm hearing out in the field, like Amy Sue Root. She can't get 48-hour or 24-hour care for her daughter, but she can get 12. She's a registered nurse. You want to stimulate the economy? Let's put a nurse back to work by giving her two 12-hour sessions with a caregiver. Otherwise, guess what it costs? $600 to about $3,000 a day from the time you're 10 years old all the way to the time, what, 70, 80, in an assisted living facility. What's cheaper, a couple hundred dollars a day or $600, $800, $1,000 a day in an assisted living facility, and there's no guarantee she'll get good treatment there? We don't make good decisions.
She's going to get bad treatment.
We don't make good decisions in this country.
No, we don't.
Just
it's
don't.
It's a $15 trillion deficit we have that is going to, I think, it's going to cripple our nation in the upcoming year.
We're talking about cutting Medicare
and
Medicaid. And Donald, I'll leave you with this because I think you got a lot of great callers and keep going, but Donald Trump said it so perfectly, and a lot of people don't like Donald Trump. I love him. I think he's awesome. He said if the economy was rolling real well, we wouldn't be worried about Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. So I've looked up the numbers, Craig. Social Security is $78 billion a year. Sounds like a lot of money to you and me. But we have a $16 trillion economy. $78 billion is not the problem. Medicare is not the problem. The problem is we are given away for 30 years, we've given away our jobs to Korea and Mexico and all these other places. We don't drill our own oil. We have gotten away from doing our own manufacturing. It's ridiculous, and I need to shut up.
It is. DJ, I want to thank you so much. I think I got this right. Nicole, you wanted to talk, right? Or Paul, who's on the phone?
This is Paul.
Paul, did you have something to say? Nicole said, yes, you wanted to talk, but it's Paul on my computer.
Exactly. She's the one that got me on this thing, and I just wanted to say I'm enjoying the show tremendously tonight. I've got a lot of good things. I've heard a lot of good things. Very passionate speakers, and I'm overwhelmed at how beneficial this is for everybody that can listen.
Thank you, Paul. And I have to tell you how beneficial it is for me. You know, I don't know about you guys out there, but sometimes our system, combined with our health, combined with society, I get really down on myself. And I'm a capable person, but you know what? If you start talking about these labels that people want to put on us, It disempowers us, and we have to advocate because we make community better. And heck, we make up what is it, 6-7% of the population, 5 million. What do we make up? We make up a large part of the population right now, and so we are contributing members, and we make communities better. Don't you agree, Paul?
I agree 100%. We need to continue to contribute to society and be positive. But at the same time, we also have to recognize that there are problems with the system, as I'm hearing on the show tonight. And there are people that are passionate about fixing the system. That's the key. That's the real key to the puzzle, I think, is putting those things into place and doing the work and staying dedicated to the cause. This is what it's all about, and I'm really glad to be a small part of that.
Well, thank you, Paul. I am going to put you on hold because I am going to try. We got a couple people that I just haven't got to, and I'm going to try to get to them. 585, can you hear me?
Is that me?
That's you. Is this Frank?
This is fantastic. Frank, how are you?
I am doing okay tonight. How about yourself, Frank?
Fantastic. Unfortunately, I only got out of here around 10:30. I missed the first half an hour. Who is this guy, Brent? Brent.
Brent is a friend of Mike's, and he is over in New York, and he is trying to establish.
Well, if he can get hold of me, I'd love to talk to him. I'm in Rochester, New York. And he's got a plan. I want to be on board helping him get that done.
Well, awesome. So, Brent, I hope you heard that because my control panel is just gone crazy here and names are disappearing and I'm not sure who is who. I think he was the unknown caller. Now he's gone. Yeah, this control panel. So Brent, I don't know if you're on tbisn.org or on Facebook. If you look for Fantastic Frank, he's my friend on Facebook and the TBISN, which is the TBI Survivors Network. And I hope he gets a hold of you because if you guys can do that, I think it'll set precedence. There is no protocol.
And then who was the guy that wanted to put this on a radio show? Tell me who he is, too.
Oh, DJ. That was DJ. He came, we all need a radio show. I can see it now. Syndicated in 1,000 cities. Disability radio. I mean, because we...
That'd be great.
It would.
I know I have a mentor named Frank Gazarowski who used to do radio, who could help me get this done. I think he can do it.
Awesome, awesome. And I do have to share with the listeners. I'm going to put you on hold, Frank, because I'm going to try to get another caller. We're almost out of time. But for those of you who don't know, our shows are now available on Citadel Broadcasting. And kind of interesting. I'm in the state of Washington, and guess where Citadel don't go? But anyway, they're going to start playing some of our stuff nationally. I think they got like 56 stations or 55 stations. And so I am just seeing here, did I get everyone whose hands up? I'm okay. Here is a 980. We got about a minute. 980.
Hey, Craig. This is Craig. How are you tonight?
Hey. I am doing good. Yeah, the phone lines are crazy tonight.
Yeah, you're doing a wonderful job. You know, I think that it's really important that we, as brain injury survivors, I know for myself that I needed to find doctors that really were on board and understood and had a history of working with, high-functioning brain injury people. Otherwise, doctors that don't really understand and psychologists and so forth that don't really, have a clue about how brain injury can impact people, that they can sell you down the river. And that's why it's very important to interview doctors and psychologists and other people that before you start seeing, if your doctor's not really aware of brain injury or doesn't have a history of working with people with brain injuries, I would really encourage, you know, the people that are listening to this to really look around and ask around and interview different doctors to see whether they're not just giving you lip service, but they really have a history of working with brain injured folks. I've been very fortunate to have doctors and psychologists that have a history of working with brain injured people so that, you know, my high-functioning abilities I still have a lot of deficits and limitations.
Well, Craig,
that lead.
We are running out of time. I am so sorry. We are just running out of time. This show
no
went
problem.
Really quick, and I agree with you, Craig. And I have to tell you that my last doctor, I said I have a brain injury. Oh, I know all about brain injury. Well, folks, I want to thank you. Next week is Kevin Phillips, and he's going to be doing a veteran's special. And again, Kevin Phillips is a Marine who got a traumatic brain injury, and so he's going to be doing a veteran's thing. His veteran's being. We should have actually traded. But guys, I want to thank you, and get the word out there. Let's make people know about brain injury. Well, God bless you, and thanks for listening tonight.